The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Denver Breakdown Show, with special guest Angelo Reyes. Hope those glasses are full, because we're going deep.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark night. It's a dark night.
What is up, everybody? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I am your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for FlowCombat.com. And we are here today to break down UFC Denver, except you won't have to listen to me the whole time, which is really great, first of all. So let's get that out of the way. But we have a special guest here who we're going to pick the brains of. Hopefully we can do this more, not just with him, but we can get other high-level I like getting fighters' opinions and all that stuff, and I love when shows do that, so keep doing that if you're a show that does that. Nothing wrong with that. But I love talking to the men behind the fighters, the men behind the concepts, the men that are quietly advancing our sport that you want to talk about fighter pay behind. Well, we'll get to coach pay at another time, but we got Angelo Reyes, one of the most acclaimed MMA striking coaches, who, yes, you may also know from the boxing world, whether it's through Mayweather or Wild Card, or I'm starting to learn Angelo even did Kempo Karate. Angelo, say what's up, man.
Hey, guys. How you doing? And, you know, it's not just the men behind these fighters. You know, we have the big fight with Cotto and James Kirkland, and James Kirkland's coach is Ann Wolf, who's one of the greatest female boxers we've ever had. So we're in a stage now where men, women, it's all just one thing, and I hope you do get to have more coaches in here, and maybe even a female coach be a guest here.
That would be awesome. Well, hopefully we can get maybe a female boxer, MMA fighter.
Maybe
one of those we can get.
I was actually even thinking, because we're talking this, because I know Misha's just retired.
Okay.
But I think she could end up making a pretty good coach, so you should probably get her on your podcast at some point, if she ever wants to even transition into doing something like that.
Yeah, I think she's still got her podcast. I haven't been in the gym as much as I should. I don't know if she has, but she's a really good rolling partner, man. She's really great in the gym. She's definitely that care kind of comes across, and that, you know, she wasn't just trying to rip my head off, which she could, by the way.
Of course.
And it was really, thank you, Misha, for not. So yeah, I mean, you see certain things and certain aspects that not all the fighters have, but translate. That's another thing, you know, somebody who's competed and who's I've taught on a much smaller level, not fighters, but you want to talk from Taekwondo, general karate, to, you know, martial arts and general jiu-jitsu and stuff. You know, you appreciate certain things, and so when you see a coach kind of handling his way to the fighter, even though it's a different role than, you know, you're teaching a group class or something, obviously. Right. There are certain, I guess, staples that come across, and I'm sure you pick up on it much more than me when you watch, you know, let's say you're watching the UFC and you see these guys doing corner work, and you kind of separate the.
And I mean, and a lot of times too, like, when you're watching it on fight night, it's easy to criticize what's happening during fight night,
right.
But the truth is, you know, for example, like, I know there's a lot of memes out there right now with Edmund telling Ronda to move her head, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? If you had 13 months with someone and they're still not moving their head, then I don't know what happened within that 13 months.
Yes.
And if you've had 12 fights with someone and they're not still moving their head, then I don't know what happened in those 12 fights. So like you said, there's... It, you know, it's easy because visually we see a fight happening and you can criticize what's happening in that corner. But really, if all the work had already gotten done beforehand, the corner work should be more like in football, where when we're watching the head coach and he's talking to the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, they're making the plays happen. How much work got involved during the entire season? And how many times did those plays get run over and over and over again to where when you see it getting executed, during the game that we're actually watching at the highest level. You know, that's why, like, you know, they say the armchair quarterback or the sitting, oh, I would have caught that pass. It's like, no, you would not have caught that pass, or no, you would not have made that call. And it seems easy to say you would have done whatever, but really, man, you know, like you said, and that's why I love what you do, where you're breaking things down, and you love reading your stuff all the time, because you really get in deep, man. I mean, talk about a guy who, you're like the guy in Yelp who, you go to a restaurant, you're eating the food, and then you taste it, and then you're like, you know what, man, I'm gonna taste this so much, I'm gonna figure out what all the ingredients are, I'm gonna study about this dish, I'm gonna study the history of it, and Dan, that's how I feel when I'm reading one of your matchups, where I'm like, man, this guy went in deep. You know, all these amateur awards this person won, and all this, all these things that you would have never even known about the fighter, had they not. And when they read your write ups, you go, "Wow, did you even know this about Masvidal?" Or, "Wow, did you know this about Cerrone? This is crazy." So I love reading your stuff, man.
Man, that's a huge compliment. One, two. I think now, just to piss everybody off, my next breakdown, I think when you open it up, it's just going to be a Yelp review on food. I'm going to do it the same. I'm going to have supplemental info. I'm going to have, like, my finishing percentages on plates. So you guys can thank Angelo for my next breakdown. And if I keep... yeah. And, oh, by the way, sorry.
Yelp.
By the way, let me clear some. If you heard some rattling, some bones getting chewed, or, you know, some kisses going on right now, it's my dog, my pit bull boxer, Benjamin's in the room, and... me and Angelo get really passionate. That's why we're kind of here to talk about from our different perspectives. You know, from the analyst to coach perspective, we get so passionate. But the problem with boxer pit bulls, Angelo, is they sense excitement. So that's why, yeah, that's why you were getting huggy, back right now. Yeah,
and then they're kissy, yep, and yep, huggy.
Yeah, so apologies. You're going to hear Benjamin throughout the episode. So I actually might just credit him. It depends how involved he gets in the episode here. But we are going to break things down. I know we're kind of all over the place right now. We are gonna break down UFC Denver. I guess the point we're just trying to make with all that is not so much to talk about us or anything like that, but it's cool to kind of get these balanced perspectives. So I know I'm gonna really abuse Angelo while he's here and ask him some questions. And if you have any, you know how to join the show, hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast. Submit all your questions that way. But Angelo, we're gonna kind of start from the bottom.
All right.
I couldn't, I'm not going to make my guests do the same kind of homework here. So what I'm going to do is we're going to go from the bottom, and I'm going to kind of frame these fights up and give my plays to the audience. A lot of people, you know, with my breakdowns at Flow, by the way. Thank you guys for hanging with me. Right now we're going through a transitionary period with the format. You know, we're trying to figure out what kind of works best. So I think this week I've got like real in-depth on Masvidal Cerrone, which we're going to talk about here in the program, Orlovsky, Ngannou, and Shevchenko Pena. So Protect Your Neck Podcast here, this essentially is just a vehicle to get all my in-depth stuff for, you know, if you were going to do that anyways. So with no further ado, we are going to start from the bottom. All right. Sorry about that. That was kind of a rough cut. Benjamin was taking over the set and he was molesting Angelo. So... First high-level striking coach I have in my humble abode, and my dog molests him. This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, a show dedicated to high-level MMA.
And getting molested by Benjamin.
Yes, that's right. Yes, right. He likes it. He likes Uncle Angelo. All right, so we're going to go to the first fight. By the way, we had a bunch of general avoids. Either we have, debutants or close to it, and when I say close to it, I'll kind of get into it. We have Jason Gonzalez versus JC Cantrell. This is this one's on my avoid list because these are guys, they've been on their own perspective circuits. You got Cantrell more from the Midwest circuit, which not hating on the Midwest, got love for the Midwest, but you know, there's some inflated records. Not, when you actually go through and you kind of look at the organizations and you go through the opponents.
Did he fight at MCC? Did JC Cantrell do that? Or do you know which ones it was?
I don't believe so off the top of my head. Let me pull him back up here. But essentially, he's got some solid skills. It's really hard because he was thrown in there, you know, on short notice with Michelle Braceres, who's literally like a little tank. And I think that might even be his nickname. But he's like a little tree stump, and he's really deceptively hard to deal with, and has a good record, even though he's kind of inactive. So I mean, I didn't really hold that. That was
his debut, then, right?
Yeah. So he was kind of just getting rode into the fence. Really wrestled. Braceres was kind of getting off on him.
Right.
But there we go. Here's some of his fights there. We had some. He finished off in a legacy fight, and that's where I kind of saw him. When you get down, you know, to OFC, BGMA, you know, all these things.
Right.
A little harder to get some of these footage on the guy.
He's got a ton of fights, though, man. Jeez.
Yeah, he does, absolutely. But that's where they kind of get, we're kind of talking about off air. We talk about, negative or positive, certain stereotypes about areas, gyms, etc. And that's kind of the thing. I mean, we've seen a lot of these, undefeated guys come into the UFC and they just kind of lose their first fight. How many undefeated guys lose that first?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's certain ones where they kind of build up, like the Garbrandts or the, there's those certain ones for sure, but there's a lot of ones that just quietly get their records just smashed for taking a fight on short notice because they want to get in the big show. Let's be honest. I mean, you see, it's tough out there. When you get that break, you get that phone call, it's a big deal.
Right.
No matter what time it comes at. He took that, and so I expect to see a better version of him. I don't hold that against him.
So the first one you're not really counting as his. I mean, it was his debut, but you're like, I'll give you a pass. Let's see what you really do, because this one he's 17-4 against a 10-3 guy, Jason Gonzalez.
And Jason Gonzalez, when you go and watch him, like he's huge. He's like he's huge for the division. I think he's 6'1" or 6'2", maybe six foot. But he's really tall. But the thing is, I think one of his most impressive wins is over a guy, where he looks the best is a guy I know that's on the record there, who's not necessarily the best. And the only reason why I say that is, I'll leave it out there. I'll let a dead horse lay and stuff. But the guy, I'm not gonna mention his name. Not the best, but I'll say this: if you look on his record, it's probably like Jason Gonzalez's most impressive performance. And I know the guy wasn't against, so it wasn't that impressive in retrospect, if that makes sense.
No, I understand.
I'm trying to be polite here without saying a name.
You're not trying to say that the guy's a cab driver.
I'm not trying to assault the guy's character as a martial artist or anything like that. But yeah, and you don't want to hold it against Jason Gonzalez that, he lost to Drew Dober, who, Drew Dober's really good, but he hasn't had the most success, and that was his first finish in a while, and people are holding that against him. Well, the problem was is that you see some of these guys where like they have these athletic skills, like Gonzalez, he's big frames, he can do things on the feet, he really can throw that leverage, make strong tie kicks. He's not like flimsy. He's not one of those flimsy guys, right? He throws with power. But the thing is, when you don't see those performances over and over again, he was in the Tough House for a bit, and he didn't look great there. And again, you're like, oh, you got stopped there. And you're like, well, it's a Tough House. You're away from your coaches. You're away from your normal preparation. It's a weird scene. So I never try to hold it too much against a fighter for a Tough House. But then, you see them in, before the UFC, then you see them in the UFC. You see them in this kind of, in-between phase in the Tough House, and you're kind of seeing the same guy. It looks like a duck, it smells like a duck, and I've already spoken about both these guys way too much than I should.
It's interesting what you're actually saying, because this is one of those matches where I can see what you're talking about. It could be a pick'em, I remember seeing this Drew Dober Jason Gonzalez fight, and guys, Drew Dober doesn't suck. The person. So Jason gets in the league, has to fight Drew again. I don't know what the backstory on it is. Drew knocks him out, but just like what you're saying is like JC. So it's kind of equal. It's like, now let's really find out what these two are made of fighting each other. It's a bit of a fair match now. And now they knew about fighting each other, Jason and JC. Neither one is like a last minute opponent shift.
I don't believe so, although there was a couple on this card, which we'll get to in a second. But if I sound like I'm stammering on my words, A, it could be the lack of sleep these past couple of days. But B, it's because the reason is because these guys have such skewed effing sample sizes, essentially, I'm trying to say. Okay. That's the whole point here, right? That's what I'm trying to say.
So we're trying a couple of mystery dishes here.
Right. Okay. So if anybody, for example, who's listening, they want to place money and know. Any thoughts on that, First of all, keep your money away from that. Not that I'm the biggest betting guy, but you know, the point of this podcast, you know, you're gonna listen to my technical stuff or my guest's technical stuff as a reference. We're not telling you where to put your money, first of all, right. Obviously. But, you know, if you really want our analysis on that, you know, A, from a smart bettor's choice, kind of fundamentally, whether it's debutantes, guys with low sample sizes, you know, not low ceilings, but not big hype coming in. I mean, right. you want to be conservative with your money and not throw it away. And from a technical, you know, analytical side, you know how it is. If you're, you know, Angelo, if you're coaching a pro fighter who's got a lot of experience, or maybe it's an amateur, it's different, right? If it's an amateur, you're not worried about the opponent. You're worried about your fighter, right? You're telling them not to worry about them so much, right? Because there's not much out on the opponent. And even if, let's say, oh, well, I'm facing a guy that's 0-2, maybe you have one of those fights. Maybe you have both of those fights in your opponent. It's an amateur, you know, who knows how long those last. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You as a coach, you know, I'm sure that there's not a ton of weight you can put behind that. At that stage, yeah, maybe it's a little more important.
And really, too, a lot of times, I mean, like anything can happen in a fight. You know what I mean? It is true. I know it sounds cliche, you know, anything can happen on any given Sunday. But the truth is, you look at a match like this, seems like it's evenly matched anyways, but he lost his debut. He lost his debut. They weren't fight. Neither one fought like somebody who wasn't good. They both fought people, two opponents that were good. So this is like a 50-50, really. Yeah. We're going to find out which one of these guys are going to end up staying in the league.
It's almost like, you know, unless there's a clear athletic or a clear on-paper skills discrepancy, these kind of matches with the way they're kind of set up, it's almost like who's the better competitor is going to win this kind
of
fight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, so I would stay away from that. We're going to go to the next fight here on Fight Pass. I believe it's Alejandre Pantoja and Eric Shelton. Both these guys were on the recent Tough 24, the Flyweight Champion series.
Oh, for a DJ. Okay.
And they both did decently well. I believe they pocketed each about a win or so apiece before getting knocked out of the tournament format.
Nice.
I admittedly have not watched Tough since, I think I watched Tough 8 with the Amir series, and then maybe the Kimbo one. That was it.
Like, you didn't watch any of the ladies ones? You didn't watch Ronda Mitchell?
I went back.
You didn't watch the Joanna one?
I would watch certain highlights of those ones, like, you know, when stuff would come out and it would get talked about, which kind of happened less and less over the years.
Right.
And then I would go back and watch fights for analytical purposes, but I've never been in, like, the reality or, like, the in-between stuff.
Huh.
And the editing, I'm afraid, like, I know kind of how editing is and stuff, so you know, you're not going to get the real views. And
so you're telling me you're not going to watch the Cody Dillashaw one? That the drama alone can be cool.
I well, you know, speaking of drama, I don't want to mention names here, so I'm going to be stammering and stuttering as I do. But I do know I'm not sure he's still with or might be in a transitioning phase. But he was a behind the scenes guy that whole series for quite some time, even on that aforementioned Misha and Ronda one. So
what?
The stories you get behind the scenes and kind of see how people, you know, really are behind the edits, that's way more entertaining than whatever I'm going to get from the broadcast.
Okay.
And so,
I mean,
I've got my ear to the grindstone. It's not that I don't.
I don't want to say anything publicly, but
Jesus,
there's some cool drama that Dan's not telling us.
I watch head trauma for 80 hours a week. I have no room for Yo Mama drama for like two hours a week. So I'll put it that way. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, you do hear some interesting stuff, but yeah, I'm
so this one, Shelton
is a really, real athletic kid, and he's the favorite, and he should be the favorite. This is one of the few underdog picks, and I'm not feeling strong. You can make an argument for either guy, and at the end of the day, you really should keep your money away
from this one.
Yeah,
Where does Shelton train?
Shelton trains out of Illinois. I think he trains with like some. I don't recognize the gym name, but
he's not training with like Jose Torres or anything like that.
No, it's a. What's his name? I forget. He used to be. He fought like John Alessio. He was a welterweight African American gentleman. Oh my gosh, he had a line in the show here at Thomas and Mack. I think he fought John Alessio. Anyways, but one of the ex MMA fighter guys, kind of opened a gym, you know, and guy decent level, fought UFC level and whatnot. Right. And Chicago seems to be developing. He's not like hitting like any of the normal or the more popular spots,
right.
Like Valley Flow Striking or Luis Claudio, which is hot
right now.
I haven't seen any of that on his Instagram when I was doing my fishing and my stalking, as I tend to do.
Good talent, and he's a favorite for a reason.
Here's the thing. It's one of those things where I'm almost kicking myself and wishing that I I changed my pick, even though it really didn't matter because it's on my fights to avoid. But the reason why I went with Pantoja is because Pantoja is essentially a jiu-jitsu guy. He's got, you know, RFA flyweight champion, trains with Black House, good people, California, more on, you know, on paper accolades as far as jiu-jitsu competitions, black belts, and it translates, it, you know, inside the ring octagon. I can't even know which one I'm going to use. The thing is, he's not like super athletic, right? He's like your jiu-jitsu guy, kind of depends on the jiu-jitsu, except. Even though, you know, he shows improvements in his striking, there's still something to be desired. He shows, like, offensive shots and emphasis and urgency you want to see, you know, for the wrestling department.
Okay.
If you have a jiu-jitsu guy without wrestling, you don't go very far. We've seen that, right?
Right.
And, but the thing is, he shows this intangible where he's went against athletic guys. Like, the guy, I forget the name, who's a really good athletic striker. He took the title from an RFA. And he lit him up. I mean, he hit him with uppercut that, you know, kind of froze him up in space. You saw his knees give up and everything.
Wow.
And it looks bad. Everyone's like points to that. And, you know, you can point to that, but, oh, this guy got tagged and this and that. But he went on to win these fights and he wasn't discouraged once. And that counts a lot for me.
Yeah.
You know, he has a certain thing about him where, like, he doesn't look the most athletic. Although he's 26, he can make, both these guys are 25, 26. They're in that cusp where they can make those fight-to-fight improvements.
Right.
But he shows that kind of edge, whereas Shelton has that. He impresses you and wows you where he's like one of those guys. He didn't have the striking background, but you see the way he holds his stance. He's not just an athletic guy. Like, he looks athletic. He has muscles. But he moves like, you know, I've been trying to, you know, doing all these types of martial arts for over 20 years, Angelo. And fuck, this guy looks like he picked it up in like 2 days. You know what I'm saying? He can do it out better than me. And I'm talking about just like holding his stance and kind of moving around. Like, I don't know how well, if we pick about how he's turning over his hooks,
and much less
how that technique applies. Yeah, there's different levels you can judge there. But I'm talking about, you know, you're just getting a base look. Let's say you're coaching a group class, and there's that dude that rolls in, and you're just like, there's something there. You know, this motherfucker trained before. Mm-hmm. And then you go talk to these guys, and usually they have trained or something, but the ones that really kind of impress me and kind of, I'm sure, catch your attention as a coach, when they haven't trained and they're showing, you know, these real pickups and stuff.
Hmm.
But the problem is, it's easy to get behind. You know, you see a real athletic specimen like that and he can move well. And, you know, there's stuff that picks apart that he does technically wrong, but his head's in the right place. He's looking for the back, or, you know, he's throwing the knee at the right time after the punch, and he's head's in the right place. Like,
you pick apart what you're saying. You're saying Shelton's got good instincts.
But I don't know how far it goes. That's the problem.
Right.
We've seen those guys where it looks good, and you teach them, and they get more experience, but they kind of do the same thing. Unless they're, you know, especially those real athletic and physical specimens, I don't want to say front runner, and I don't think Shelton is a front runner, but in the sense of a front runner, those guys where they're so athletic and gifted, no matter what they do, basketball, and now they want to pick up boxing or martial arts, and they're doing really well at it. And maybe they do an amber competition, they do really well. And it almost becomes, you almost don't want your guy to do too well because, you know, especially if they're going to do it as a career and become a pro, you don't want them to hit that adversity in the UFC stage. You don't want the UFC to be the first time they hit adversity, right? You want them to hit some type of measured adversity in their amateur career, in their regional pro career. You know, even people that kind of, you know, are products that are going to be, you know, skyrocketed faster, there still has to be some type of process. I mean, would you agree?
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand kind of what you're even saying about this is, you like Pantoja because you've seen him kind of go under fire.
Right, exactly. So
and you feel like, well, Shelton's athletic and he's talented, but you don't even know if he can handle how hot that kitchen will be.
Yes.
So, but you still are telling everybody, look, man, don't bet on this one. Just because.
Exactly.
Don't bet on this one.
Well, like, we were talking about how it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, we can explain to someone all day, like, okay, this is how you should throw this. So if somebody's not throwing this, you can use basic point of deduction that maybe they're not the greatest at that.
Right.
And that's a very basic way of looking at it. But when you've done something, when you've been beaten up or you've, you know, been on the receiving or giving end of these equations actually in the rooms, right?
Right.
And had those experiences, you look at it from a different eye. So what I'm saying is essentially Shelton should be the favorite, but what people should be careful is this is one of your classic situations where you look at it on the outside and you're like, oh yeah, this guy should definitely be the favorite.
Okay.
And you look at this guy and you're like, oh, this guy, but it's all perspective, right? You're like, yeah, you can look at it like he struggled, or you can look at it like he overcame adversity, and that's really impressive.
Okay.
You know, we don't know that.
I can go with that.
That's going to be a real interesting fight.
So far you're picking Pantoja.
Yes.
And you're saying
Cottrell.
Who is
the favorite? Okay. Cottrell is justified favorite.
Okay, so you got Cottrell, Pantoja's a dog pick, though. All right.
And next one, Marcos Rogerio de Lima versus Jeremy Kimble. Essentially, Kimble's a guy that's been on the regional scene from that Denver scene. He fought, I came across him doing tape study on Chris Camozzi. Chris Camozzi beat him. This one's an interesting one. I picked de Lima, but this one's a stay away. But if you want to maybe play anything, you could maybe play Kimble because, you know, Kimble's never been stopped. He's been submitted like three, you know, like four or five times.
But never though, been knocked out or never
but
been
yeah, because he's one of those dudes, he looks like kind of a big country, as you can tell from the picture. And he has that durability as well. And de Lima, I don't want to say front runner, but de Lima's a guy who just goes in. I think barely any of his fights made it past the first round. He's do or die on his shield.
Wow.
And
both kind of swinging away strikers.
So when you get one of those guys that's do or die on their shield, as physically imposing as he might look compared to the Roy Nelson pasty guy. But the Roy Nelson pasty guy can take it. And you've seen what these guys turn, you know, the biggest monsters to turn into mice sometimes come round to, you know?
Oh, 205. Okay. All right.
And
they have the same amount of
pro fights.
Look at
all those round ones there.
Yeah. No,
he's a do-or-die kind of guy.
Have the same amount of pro fights. It's almost identical. I mean, their records are almost identical. So, okay. All right.
Yep. So,
who you're picking?
De Lima. And I'm, but I say stay away. If you want to play it, though, I'm going to pull up the odds right now. Because you can get some nice numbers on Kimble as the dog. And, you know, again, if you're going to do underdogs, you know, people like to look for heavyweights for obvious reasons because, right?
Right. Yes.
Knockdown percentages.
Yes. Yeah, well,
momentum,
too.
Momentum
anytime you're going above 170, man, knockouts can happen. So,
yeah, that's your
trajectory. And this is a 205. Okay, so
yep,
he's plus 155, Kimble?
Yep.
Okay.
And then, you know, if you want to do like an inside the distance on Kimble, if you're, you know, at a house, I'm pulling up five dimes right now for this. Let's see. Where is he at? There he is. We don't have a KO prop yet, but a Kimble inside is plus 320.
Yeah, I mean, chances are, just from what you're saying, it sounds like this is one of those fights that's going to end in the first round, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, well, yeah, the fight won't go the distance. I like that prop because that's like, you know, it doesn't matter who wins as long as someone finishes somebody, and you can kind of attach those for parlay fodder. This one's a little too high for my taste because you're getting minus 300. I'm usually like minus 220 or below, then I'll start attaching those.
Okay.
And that's only if it's like heavyweights who I know are going to do some damage, which may come up in a fight coming up, actually, or a light heavyweight fight possibly coming up. But we're going to go to the next fight here, which is Eric Spicely versus DiCirico, the Italian kid. Do you know anything about either of these two?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So DiCirico is an Italian kid I was pretty impressed with. You know, Italy, you're going to think, we're going to get boxers, maybe kickboxers, and then if we're going like top of the list of what's most prominent in the area, then you're going to work your way to grappling. But we're seeing these guys that come from Italy, and they're good at grappling. DiCirico reminds me of George St. Pierre in short. He's really athletic. He's got great wrestling, good change-ups, you know, transitions well. Spicely was a guy who nailed one of the biggest upsets of the year against Thiago Santos.
Yeah.
It was a huge in Brazil. Ended up choking him out. He had a falter against Sam Alvey. Didn't look too impressive on the show. Again, it's the show, so you know you can't expect too much there. But I took Spicely here, man, because you know he's doing the right things. He went to Denver to train, training with a bunch of camps. So he's already up there in the elevation early, where you know DiCirico's having to come from. Hold on one second.
Everybody be cool. You be cool.
All right, so we're back for the third time. My dog knocked my whiskey over my phone and computer for a second, but
now Dylan's cranky because the alcohol's gone.
Yeah. Look what you did, Benjamin. One of these days, we will have a smooth ride. But until then, I'm probably gonna edit some fun music and little breaks in between there. So that'll be fun. Hopefully you guys can enjoy that. We were talking about DiCirico and Eric Spicely. Essentially, I like DiCirico and I wanted to take him here. I'm high on him for an Italian prospect, but...
Okay. But you're saying Eric Spicely.
Well,
was Spicely on the Ioana team or was he on that? No, because that was 205ers. So he wasn't on the TUF, was he?
Oh, he was. I don't know. Again, I don't.
Okay.
I just watched kind of the highlights. I only watched the fights. I just, really focus on the coaches. Well, but essentially, the reason why I go Spice is because his world's on the ground, and Chirico, he can't help himself but go for takedowns. So he's going to be playing into Spicely's world. I don't like it. I don't like the travel. Spicely's in Denver, training, revamping, already stepping up his camp. I think he actually just lives and trains in Denver. So, I mean, yeah, it just seems like a lot of things are going right for him. So I'll be siding with Spicely on this one. No bet, no play. I don't think you should either. And, we'll go next one. Here's one. This is what I was talking about for parlay fodder.
205.
Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. As far as, like, don't go the distance, you know, for parlay fodder, this is a good one. Let's look at what we're getting for this one right now.
So, Henrique da Silva versus...
Minus 190. See, that's my alley. That's, like, Danton parlay fodder right there. But the thing is, this Johnson guy, there's not a lot of footage on him. And from what I have heard, and from what I have, very little, I think there's literally like two samples I was able to pull. I don't know how y'all did through the webs or dark webs there trying to pull the fight footage out. But Johnson, essentially, he comes out of MMA lab. He looks like he's like 56 years old, but apparently he's in his 20s.
Okay.
And so, which is a good sign. And although MMA lab... I just think, man, I swear, the UFC matchmakers must hate that gym because those guys have had, like, the most unfavorable, not just been, like, underdogs, but have, like, unfavorable matchups. This guy's actually favored in this matchup, and I think he should, just based on Henrique da Silva's risk management. This is a quick turnaround for Henrique da Silva. He just fought Paul Craig, the Bear Jew, not too long ago. And he's just kind of a guy, like, even whether he's winning or losing, he's always getting hit. He's always getting in bad positions. So it's essentially against a guy with more process, 6-0. And you look at not just a 6-0, I mean, you look at the type of chokes he has, Jordan Johnson, that is, I'm speaking of the MMA lab product, who is older and is not wrestling, just so we're tracking. You look, he has a, you know, anaconda, guillotines. Let me pull it up here. Essentially, when you see arm triangle, anaconda, these are the kind of chokes you want to see from a wrestler. You want to see that a wrestler does an arm triangle. That means he's, you know, on top as he should, and, you know, with the types of passes and kind of catches that you're going to naturally get more from wrestling, the head and arm choke is going to be one of the more high percentage submissions you can give to a wrestler going in MMA. Mm. So if he's hitting those in combination, it's a good sign. But what I like to see is like stuff like, you know, these anacondas and stuff like that, because it means he works well from a front headlock. And, you know, wrestlers should work well from a front headlock where they're snapping down. They're going to work toward the back. They can start punching from there, start putting hooks in, etc. But essentially, no matter the style, you want to see a guy that's good riding from that, whether they're a wrestler or not. But if they are a wrestler, which means they're already good at riding people from that position, and you see, even though this is probably against low-level competition, granted, actually, some of these are in RFA, you still want to see it. You want to see that he's applying it and that he's translating it, you know, to fight night, especially, you know, at a wrestling base, because it's not like, you know, early 2000s where it's like, oh, this guy's a wrestling base, he's going to win. You know, odds makers make the guy the favorite. It's a little bit of a different world now, you know. Strikers aren't getting written off to wrestlers so much by the odds makers and fans and pundits, right?
Right.
It's a little more even. The knowledge is out there. You know, strikers know how to defend takedowns now.
Well, this one is interesting. I kind of understand what you're saying, Dad, because here's a guy who's 6-0. He's making his UFC debut, it looks like, in here.
Yes.
He's fighting a guy who's 12-1. 205 on the weight, so that's kind of rough. But like I said, man, at the end of the day, if you guys want to make it to the show, for any of the fighters out there listening, you want to make it to the UFC, you better be ready to fight anyone. Because Joe Soto fought TJ Dillashaw. Then wasn't that his UFC opener or his UFC debut?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and that was for the title, right? That's why Joe Soto's still in the league. So, like I said, guys, man, work on your martial arts. I don't know. I mean, I like MMA Lab. John Crouch is the head coach, right? You know, I like Benson Henderson and all those guys. I think Johnny Case is training out of the MMA lab now. I know Dracar Close trains out of the MMA lab, and he just had a win on the last one. So I like Jordan. I mean, I like the chances. just if you're gonna look at it on pure experience, man, I would say Da Silva should be the favorite, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. The kid's undefeated. You know, I don't know. Maybe he stays undefeated. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. So if Johnson is the underdog, I'll bet Johnson.
I think he's the favorite. So I mean, even more so. I'm no play for me here. But okay. But yeah, I mean it's tempting. There may be some money to come in on, you know, Henrique Da Silva. He's not a notable name, but I mean he's fought in the UFC a couple of times, so maybe he's more notable. But we'll move on to the next one. Nash versus Jing Liang. This one is my first and only parlay piece because there's not a lot that you can really depend on here as far as favorites or parlay pieces. Okay.
Jing Liang is strong.
Which is crazy, yeah. Which is crazy. But well, this guy Bobby Nash, even though he's got wrestling credentials, we just talked about how Johnson translates it well. Nash, not so well.
Okay.
Not so well. I don't know if it's from Minnesota State or he's originally from Minnesota, but I mean, just essentially, I'll just put it in a nutshell, essentially just really low-level regional stuff where a guy like that should at least be dominating at the very least, even if it's unimpressively. And it's just very ugly fights. This is one of those fights that could get uglier as it goes on, except the thing is, Li Jingliang, he thrives in ugly fights, especially in early on in his career, but now we're actually seeing him do, you know, sweeps and apply techniques from the bottom, and he picks up on the things really fast. He worked with Robert Follis, so Extreme Couture, okay. Obviously, I know Robert, nothing but great things to say. Robert had nothing but great things to say about Li Jiang. Guys, I need to grapple with him. He looks like he just has, pardon my offenses if you get offended by this, but I grew up in the 90s. Looks like he has retard strength. And essentially, like, I asked some pro fighters who I know, I got chances to go. I'm like, let me ask you something. This guy looks like, I hate using this term, but like, it fits with Li Jiang. He looks retard strong. Like, like you want to put it like the way, because essentially what I mean by that is you'll see him out grapple guys in positions where he shouldn't have the leverage and it shouldn't work. And he makes it work. You know, he has a, He just is crazy, you know, crazy attributes that don't necessarily get represented on paper there.
He's a big boy for sure. Jeez.
But anyways, I feel confident him here, so that's why.
So you're picking him.
Yeah. I just feel it's a mismatch. I just feel it's one of those spots. It's not like he's the next big thing. But if you're looking at it from
the
gaming...
Yeah, he knocked out Zafir. Was that... that was UFC 200 fight week.
Yes.
The Leech knocked out Zafir.
Yeah, he had an impressive sweep in that fight. That's kind of in particular what I'm talking about. There's a really good... he has his Armin guillotine thing that's not even in. And, you know, Zafir is passed to the other side, so there's no choke there. And
okay.
Leech just muscles him to the opposite side. It's insane. But, again, I'm just saying it's not that... He's the next coming, but from a gaming perspective,
you're betting that dude. All
right. It's a safe play.
Bet. Okay,
you get him for -150 right now at five dimes. So
okay,
not all a right. lot of juice in that comeback.
I'll go with that. That's not bad. That is not bad. Okay, I will agree. Yeah. Looking at all these stats, all right. I will agree.
All right, we're gonna go to the next fight then. Sun Sal versus Sterling. This is one where I would like to put a Sun Sal because he's the favorite coming into this, by the way. I think only like -150. Let's pull it up. I'm really bad. I should be like saying this for every fight, but
did you pick a Sun Sal on
yes.
your okay, you did pick him. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going against Aljamain.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Did Aljamain lose to Brian Caraway?
He did, and I picked him against Brian Caraway. It's kind of hard for me to say I picked him against him because, you know, there's a bias there for Extreme Couture.
Okay.
That was stated. But that being said, that was one where I was touting where I was like, this is a stupid effing line. Brian Caraway should not be this much of an underdog. Brian Caraway is a bad stylistic matchup for him. I felt that before going, you know, forget I didn't know Brian or anything at all. I even told him, I don't know you. Like, you're a bad matchup for him. That's like, this is a really good fight for you. And
you don't feel like was that Aljamain's last fight? So then this is his comeback fight from losing to Brian Kerwin?
Yeah, so it's kind of
insane. So you're still picking a Sun Tzu, huh?
It's tough, man, because I like Aljamain Sterling. I like his personality. I root for him. I like his grappling style.
You like his coaches? Ray Longo and all those
guys? Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know him personally.
No, I'm just talking about style.
Yeah. Okay. From what I see, personality, martial artist, all the above. Yeah, I got nothing bad to say, for sure. It's just one of those things where there was so much, it's been tempered, obviously. He's a plus 120 dog to a minus 140 Rafael Sun Tzu. It's just one of those things, he was hyped so hard, and there was no striking game there,
was a lot of... the Funk Master can't punch.
There was a lot of window dressing to kind of avoid range and pick his spots on the angles he wanted to get in to ultimately set up a takedown, and that's fine.
What did Caraway say? Did Caraway say he hit hard or not really?
I didn't ask him about that.
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah. I don't think he wasn't in the gym for a minute, and I definitely wasn't in the gym for a minute since then. But before that fight, we were both in the gym for a minute, so I just talked to him about that one a few times. But honestly, even that means nothing. Like I would have picked and put money, which I did, put money on Brian Carroll anyways for that number. Okay. It was a stupid number for a guy with no striking. Developed striking game at the time and experience, and Rafael Sun Tzu has that experience. He, matched one of the biggest winning streaks. Although striking's not much to, write home about, I like it. He rarely throws himself out of position, although he claims, more that Brazilian Muay Thai style. He's very mobile on his feet. He's not too plotty or anything like that. Faber was able to take his back in the day, and I'm sure, Aljo could sub him, but his takedown defense and wrestling, he's been one of the hardest guys to take down, and even though it's only 77%, but also one of the harder guys to hit. 70% would list now, but I remember it listing higher prior to his maybe last fight or two. But the thing is with Sun Tzu's inactivity and age, you wonder when's the fighters start kind of hitting that downtrend or that downturn, and that could be it for a Sun Tzu. So I see a lot of people on that, playing Aljo for that reason, because this could be where Aljo, finally put, I hope this is where, I'm a fan of Aljo, man. I hope this is where he puts his striking presence together. But if he doesn't have that glaring hole, it's very hard for me, like Yair Rodriguez starting to show more presence defensively and offensively in boxing range, but up until maybe his last fight or two, he had like almost no presence. He's barely clocking off of one side. And, this guy's great and all this stuff, but it's like slow down with the hype when a guy barely strikes off of his left side, both kicks and punches 10 times around, barely strikes in boxing range at all. And we're going to call him the second coming. Let's just relax for a second. I mean,
so that's kind of where you're at with
it's one of those things. Yeah, there's certain.
Hey, relax, man.
Don't get me wrong. Sterling should not emphasize on striking. That's not his strength. He should emphasize on grappling. Yair should not emphasize on boxing. His strength is going in and out and throwing these kicks. That is his strength. I wouldn't try to change him as a coach, but what I'm saying for the healthy perspective is we're so fickle as fans, and I'm not talking about me and you per se, I'm talking about kind of the general MMA whole, the general narrative, right? We're so quick to jump on these narratives when not only are we so quick to dismiss these fighters, but we're so quick to dismiss these facts, I'm not talking about a basic fact. This guy is blue kind of facts.
Right.
And even though, again, Sterling, does that mean he should focus on a striker and become a striker? No, not at all. But you'd be silly to overlook that, right?
If you're betting, and again, anything can happen.
Right.
If you're betting, it's a smarter bet to bet on Sterling.
Yes.
But I could see why you're picking a Sun Tzu, because a Sun Tzu fought in UFC 200. I was there on the floor watching that fight, and I do remember Dillashaw versus a Sun Tzu, and that was a pretty good fight. I mean, it was good. It was a good fight. So stylistically, Sterling just went against Caraway. If it goes to striking, you're right. A Sun Tzu will win. If Sterling can get him down, though, I don't know. It might be a good bet for, people to bet on Sterling if he's the underdog.
At dog money, I don't blame people. If you're gonna sprinkle a shot, that would be it. I would, play a Sun Tzu as a favorite for that price. it's just, again, for the reasons I said, I can't jump on it, you know. Okay. Not just Sterling being alive, but then, you know, where's the Sun Tzu at, you know, with right. the activity to the overall age and curve of his career. There's too many questions there. I'm just going to enjoy it and wish for the best.
Okay.
But yeah, that's
these are some tough picks, man.
All right, finally, the last one on the prelims is going to be. Let me get the line.
Oh, sorry.
It's going to be Sam Alvey versus Nate Marquardt.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay. Smiling Sam.
Just like last. Okay, so you guys, we're recording this on Thursday. I already submitted my article to Flow, so it's going to come out. So I kind of got to stand by this, like last week. Man, I swear, me and Angela were just talking about this. Fucking, I go like a year and a half of doing my own work and breakdowns, Angela, and like not having a typo, like as far as like egregious typo, as far as like a pick, you know, go out wrong. And, you know, I get signed on with Flow Combat, you know, it's a big stage. And sure enough, my first two fucking breakdowns, I
typos. Out,
yeah, typos, man. And so last one I had a answer off over a Live Barger, but and the transcription is
Live Barger over. Were you picking Live
Barger? I wasn't picking Live Barger, but if you read my breakdown, it said I picked Live Barger. Thankfully, if you listen to the Protect Your Neck podcast, you weren't thrown off because my
you
real pick
is answer off.
Yeah, and I, okay. of course I had reasoning on it. So,
okay. so this one you're saying the same thing. You're
the
not
same thing
picking
happened.
Marquardt.
I'm not picking Marquardt. You might see it. Yeah. I'm the biggest dumbass. Like, okay. I gotta create like.
So you're picking Smiling Sam Alvey.
And give it to myself every week. Hopefully not.
Are you
every
picking
week.
Smiling Sam Alvey?
Yes,
by
the biggest
knockout?
Sam Alvey. And yeah, I think he gets it done inside the distance. And if I was gonna wrongly pick, I'm glad it was Sam because I know Sam and I know Jordan Killian. So Jordan, if you're listening to this, tell Sam I didn't mean to pick against him. I'll show him my betting slips because I actually got Alvey inside the distance here for half a unit at plus 100 that you can get right now at five dimes. I just played that for half a unit for fun. I don't care if I win or lose. I bet Sam all the time, even though,
yeah. That's a good bet. No, that's a good
he's
bet
a
for
friend.
A
knockout. He's a homer pick, you know. I'm friends with Jordan, who's his best friend and co-host. Go listen to the Pound for Pound podcast, by the way. Subscribe. But yeah, so I'm a fan of those guys. So if I were to pick any fighter wrong, Angelo, I'm glad it's one I can at least explain myself to.
Okay. So you're picking Sam Alvey knockout.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's
article,
a good bet.
I'll say
that's a good bet.
Because I'm a dumbass, so you can scrutinize me on that. Do you,
I mean, you know, I've seen Marquardt in some good fights. I'm trying to remember. I think it was, Marquardt, he was the one that knocked out Allenberger, is that correct? Did he knock out? No, who was it that he knocked out that, where he came from behind, he knocked the guy out, he was in defense, then he threw.
Oh, Woodley? That was his most notable one. He knocked out Damian Maia back in the day at middleweight, and that was kind of Maia went down to welterweight after that fight back in the day. Marquardt's been around since the Pancras days, challenged Anderson Silva for the title. It's just the mileage, man, and he went through a run where like his friends were being vocal, telling him to quit. You know, like Brendan Schaub, like personalities of sport were being vocal, telling him to quit, and then almost the worst thing that happens. You know, excuse me, you could argue worse than what happened to BJ Penn at the hand of Yair Rodriguez. And that is that Nate Marquardt won after a skew of losses where he probably should already call it quick. Got knocked out a couple times in a row.
Then he wins and he stays a little too long.
Exactly. Like, and then now your battery's recharged. At least you think it is.
Right.
That's the
right,
problem.
Right.
So
I wasn't going to pick against Sam Alvey anyways because I like him.
I don't want either guy to get hurt here.
For me, first time I met Sam Alvey, he was on the undercard of, I was in Brazil with Frank. We're fighting Bigfoot Silva.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, that was the same card. Yep, absolutely.
And then, yeah, that was that crazy card where everyone that was an underdog was winning that night.
That was.
So, you know, like, I don't know. I heard somebody won a lot of money off of, like, a $10 bet. I don't know. But I mean, I know it looks like Sam Alvey's the favorite in this one. I'd still bet him, though. He's a good bet on this one.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm betting him. And that is one of three props. We have two more that are going to come on the main card when we come back. But for right now, we are going to take an actual plan break. Yes, that's right, a plan break that has nothing to do with my dog spilling whiskey or molesting my guests. This is a plan break, and we will be right back for the main card of UFC Denver.
Kuka!
cucarachas enojadas.
Tech Connect Podcast here with special guest, striking coach Angelo Reyes, here to break down UFC Denver, and we are on the main card.
Yes! That's excited! Right. I'm excited about this one!
Do you know anything?
I do, actually. Okay. So are we going to talk about Caceres?
Yeah, I want you to lead off on this. Jason Knight one? Okay. Right.
So you're picking Jason Knight on this one.
Yeah, reluctantly. I'm not like.
So you're not like, I'm totally picking Jason Knight. You're going, I'm going to pick Jason Knight.
I'm picking Jason Knight, and like my heart's rooting for Caceres.
Okay.
That makes sense.
And okay, your wallet is with Knight, but
my
wallet
stayed in my pocket for this one. Okay. Right. Like, and I'm suggesting you do the same, to be honest.
Okay.
No matter who you like, it's tough. You essentially have a developing fighter, and then you have Caceres who. She can show these late renaissances, who can show these strong performances against guys like Yair Rodriguez for 5 rounds, but it just seems like when you look at his record, it's very on, off, and the consistency.
Why do you think that is? Let me ask you that. Why do you think Caceres seems to be on, off? You think it's level of opposition? You think it's something within himself? You think that MMA Lab is good for him, or maybe he needs to have a different?
I think MMA Lab is good for him. Okay, but from doing film study, it seemed like there was inconsistencies with his camp. It doesn't seem like he was always with MMA Lab, or if he was, he was loosely affiliated, but doing his camp in California and doing this here. So I think that might have been a direct tribute, and even if it wasn't. It at least kind of gets MMA Lab off the hook because throughout those inconsistencies. Now, if he was consistently with MMA Lab throughout the inconsistencies, then you can kind of point fingers at MMA Lab and start asking more questions in that direction.
Okay.
But with him being kind of sporadic physically, literally with his camp placement and training, it kind of makes sense that he was kind of, sporadic with his performances, right?
Right, right.
So I kind of more point to Caceres there, but I don't know Caceres, but that is the most, it's always the most logical, right? We're all responsible for our own actions at the end of the day, but yeah, I definitely point to Caceres. And I don't know what to point to. I don't know what it is. There's moments of brilliance inside of him, but even when he's winning, we'll see him kind of, I don't want to say give away rounds or moments, but have slip-ups, obviously, he's not doing it on purpose, mental falters to whatever degree or definition you want to use that word to. But yeah, that's what I think it is.
Okay.
Whereas Knight is showing, fight to fight improvements. He was touting that rubber guard coming in real heavy. And, it's real easy to criticize because not a lot of success with rubber guard. And then we saw him take a short notice fight against a very bad stylistic matchup for him in Tatsuya Karajiri. So that kind of burned in my head amongst many others, maybe even the odds maker's head. So Knight didn't get too much respect, but he got my respect for being Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker's a guy that I respect, and I really liked his aggression from, his level changes on his shots, which were improved from his last times out, and his striking is showing improvements. I mean, everything really on Jason Knight is showing an improvement from fight to fight. Not a world beater improvement, not I have a ridiculous high ceiling. I believe so. Yeah, he's a Southern boy.
Okay.
So it's one of those small town Southern camps. I believe there's a 10th Planet affiliation there, hence that kind of style. Eddie's good about getting his stuff out there and getting his camp out there. He's like he's essentially a redneck Diaz brother. Is what everybody throws around. Yeah, it's great.
A redneck Diaz brother.
He
okay.
came out with the American flag to fight Dan Hooker.
Is he
last
smoking
time,
that weed too?
Shit. Maybe. Okay, maybe. Right. But he more in the sense of the trash talk though. Like he even though he can't wearing the American flag, he was talking crap like a Diaz brother, and
redneck Diaz
brother. I know I appreciate that aspect of it, and that, I'm a respect guy, I'm a martial arts guy, but when it comes to being guys being almost caricatures of themselves, I love that, man.
Okay,
so and the picture is not here, but I'm not sold on it. Yeah, I'm not
50-50 on this one. I'll just go. Okay, you're gonna go Knight. What the hell, I'll pick Caceres.
All right, cool. Angelo's got Caceres here. No play, though. So now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty. So thank you guys for sticking through. I know there was some bumps in the road, and I cannot wait to hear what I did to meld these transitions, what kind of music I'm going to torture you with to get a glimpse into the library of iTunes of Dan Tom. Yeah, you can make fun of me later, whatever I do use, but we are going to break down, I believe, is a heavyweight matchup.
Yes.
Francis.
It's a good one.
Ngannou versus Andre Arlovski, who has been one of my favorite, you know, from early days getting into the sport. Arlovski is one of those guys, man. Yeah, I was a big fan of this guy. Unfortunately, you know.
Trained at Wild Card for a couple years.
Yeah.
At one point, actually signed a contract with Golden Boy Promotions to possibly be a boxer. I was there for
all
of that.
Okay,
I remember watching. I remember Freddie working with him. I remember him in the ring. And, you know, the thing about Arlovski is he always had really good athleticism, you know, good body. You know, he's a heavyweight, moves fast. Was learning the boxing really well, but man, when Fedor knocked him out, you know, I don't know if he was ever really the same.
That's a good point.
You know, when Fedor knocked him out.
That's a good point to point to. Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously we've seen him in some great fights. I mean, what was a fight of the year candidate between him and Travis Brown? So I'm not saying he got weaker. What I'm saying is, prior to him getting knocked out by Fedor, maybe he had more of that invincibility cloak.
Yeah.
And then he got knocked out by Fedor, and then maybe it's not as it's kind of like a car, you know?
Right.
Like a car gets in an accident. It's still a good car, but the frame's not as strong.
I'm glad you bring this up, because it's not like we're picking on, like, Arlovski here, you know what I'm saying?
No, not at all.
This is a forensic path that we can go through and trace on many of fighters.
Oh, yeah.
The greatest, to the guys you never heard of and everybody in between, right? It's just an arc. It's an arc. You go up, it goes down. It's gravity, right? And gravity happens in the boxing world. Gravity happens in the MMA world. And if you know what you're looking for, you can trace it. So that's all that, you know, Angelo's talking about right now with Arlovski. But what I find most interesting, Angelo, maybe you can share your thoughts of this, is Arlovski came onto the scene, UFC 28. Okay, and what was it? Aaron Brink, okay, UFC 28, and you know, he's an athletic guy for today's heavyweight. Even at his age and at his weathered state, arguably, Andre Arlovski is still one of the heaviest hitters and most athletic guys in the heavyweight division today, still.
Right.
Fact.
Right.
Right. And especially back in the Tank Abbott bar brawler days, right? I mean, the only other athletic guy hanging around was maybe a young Frank Mir who was hanging around maybe back then around UFC 28. That's about it, right?
Right.
There were it was all just beer belly, bar brawler, crazy big farm boy. We're going to throw you into a cage and see what you can do. That was the heavyweight division in MMA at the time, right?
Right.
Back in the early 2000s here, late 90s, early 2000s when Arlovski, you know, started his career, right? And what was kind of disappointing was because you saw this guy, I mean, he was literally almost doing like, you know, Aaron Brink like charges for a takedown, and it's very similar to Kat Zingano, Ronda Rousey. You got that picture in your head?
Mm-hmm.
That 13-second fight, you bum rushes.
Mm-hmm.
Ronda Rousey falls over the top kind of in a slot, you know, not in a sloppy sprawl. I mean, obviously, you know, she falls over
it's
the
a
back
scramble.
In the scramble, gets the arm bar. Kind of like, you know, if you're transitioning from going from back control, you know, it's just a lesser controlled version of it.
Right.
Arlovski essentially did that. He did a little bit of a cage grab that young Big John McCarthy didn't call. But Arlovski essentially did that in this UFC 28 bout that I'm referencing, his first UFC fight. And you kind of just saw his athleticism. Like, this guy, you know, doing essentially what I just referenced a bantamweight female doing, you know, almost 20 years later doing. And the bummer is we never saw much develop. In fact, we saw him retrogress early and through the iterations never develop. And you know, as far as, you know, outside of the boxing, and I thought he had hit a peak, and then we saw him go down after that time with Roach, in my opinion, where it just became all about setting up the right hand. He could still throw it off the counter, he could still throw it offensively, and he could still, you know, be deceptively accurate, although he looks like he's kind of winging it, not really throwing it down the pipe. You know, you can't overlook, hopefully you can share me your opinion, which I want to get into here, you know, with the whole, you know, facing him with Frank Mir and whatnot. But that kind of what stood out to me and troubled me. It kind of bummed me out as a fan. I was hoping to see more developments and more arc because he seemed like he had the Play-Doh there, right? He had the athleticism in the frame. He had all these building blocks.
Yeah, no. I mean, like again, as a talent, like when you look at him, you're like, oh wow, this guy's gonna be amazing. I mean, I think that's even kind of what Golden Boy got sold on.
Right,
but like I said, like I think something happened when he got knocked out by Fedor.
Yeah.
Because when you look at his record, gets knocked out by Fedor, then gets knocked out by Brett Rogers. Then what is it? He loses to Bigfoot, right?
Right.
Then he gets knocked out by Sergey Karatanov.
That was a dark moment for him.
Okay,
that
right?
Was a dark
so
moment
then he has like
him,
four losses in a row. But then let's even talk about like, so he comes back and he fights Brendan Schaub. I remember watching that fight and thinking in my head, I kind of thought Brendan Schaub won.
Me too.
Right? You know, yeah. So I'm just being honest about it. So now we're looking at that's five losses in a row. And then he does this fight with Bigfoot Silva. And I would say, like, after all those fights, that was his first big win.
Yes.
Where he's like, goes to Brazil.
Clear cut.
You know, and then he does that move, knocks out Silva, right? He does this little Arlovsky shake, you know, right? He's happy again, so that's great. And then he goes, it's like, I don't know if his skill set so much got better more than his confidence just kind of rise. It's like, hey, I got this win out Brendan Schaub. Then he knocks out Silva. So he's like, oh man, I'm super confident. Then he goes to this war with Travis Brown.
Right, right.
Now that one, it's like this, that's one of those fights where, yeah, I can't quite compare it to Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns, but violence wise, jeez, those guys were really like just, I mean, they definitely, that was a fight that was a little bit of a soul taker for both of them.
I think so.
Because it took a lot out of Travis and it took a lot out of Arlovsky, and who knew how much Arlovsky had left anyway.
Yeah.
From that. So those, like, I think it's like the Schaub win gives him confidence, and the Silva win gets him to be like, man, I'm back. Maybe I'm the old Arlovsky.
Yeah.
Then he knocks out Travis Brown, and he's like, I am the old Arlovsky. And I remember when Frank told me that Dana had called him to do the Arlovsky match. You have to remember, man, Frank, so we're coming off of just knocking out Duffy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty much knocking him out of the league. You know, I mean, I heard he's finally coming back, but who knows how his head's going to hold up now, because Frank knocked him out pretty badly. I think Frank had like 4.5 weeks to get ready for the Arlovsky fight at that point, because you have to remember that it was July 15th,
that's right.
Frank knocks him out. Then Frank already had this Disneyland vacation planned with his family that he always does, and he's partying,
okay.
Right? And then when he did come back to Vegas, he was helping me with at the time Marco Hook and Bermain Stavern were getting ready for boxing matches. Frank was really getting good with his boxing lines and was actually being a good sparring partner for those guys, but in no way. Am I saying Frank was even in the correct mental state of fighting in Arlovsky? But at the time, I think UFC 191 was in trouble pay-per-view wise somehow.
Yeah, it was the DJ card. Yeah. It didn't have a lot of.
Yeah, so then
Dana
asked Frank, hey, come on, man, can you fight Arlovsky? So I remember when Frank asked me about it, I told him, I said, dude, if you're down, I'm down, because I think you'd knock Arlovsky out. That's just my opinion. I said, I remember watching Arlovsky train when we were a wild card. I think something got taken away from him from the Fedor fight. If he fights you anywhere like the way he fought Travis, 100% you're going to knock him out in the first round. What I did not anticipate, and even Dana told us, he came into the locker room and yeah, he made it public. Dana was like, you guys totally won that fight. Right after that fight with Mir and Arlovsky, even though the judges, I don't know what the hell they were looking at, they picked, maybe they didn't like Frank because he didn't look as in shape as he did for the other two fights or whatnot. But, the judges picked against Frank, in a fight where Dana clearly saw Frank winning, and we all felt Frank winning, and to the point where he even signed Frank to a brand new, like, 8-fight contract at that point. And I'm not, you know, like, again, this is not a disrespectful thing for me to say, because it's just what happened.
No, you're being honest. But
with Arlovsky fighting Mir, I honestly thought that Arlovsky was actually going to go in there and fight him.
Right.
I didn't know he was going to spend 15 minutes running. Had I known that, then maybe our game plan might have been a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, chasing around. Maybe I would have had, like, Frank doing the Rocky scene where I throw a chicken to Frank and he's running around chasing it. I'm not calling Arlovsky a chicken.
Yeah,
I'm just saying I didn't think that was what was going to happen. I thought we were actually going to see a really great technical striking match and that Frank was going to be able to use a lot of the moves that he's been doing. And even with like 4 weeks of getting prepared,
right,
and Frank was coming from a vacation, so
it was a weird fight for sure.
It was a weird fight.
And Arlovsky's had weird fights before, but he's had weird fights before, and he's at least still tried.
Yes, and that's what I was hoping. I was hoping he was like, let's make it a fight of the night. What the hell? Let's both get a 50.
Yeah.
Instead of, dude, will you fight?
Where Frank was, not only was he trying,
he was trying.
No. To prove that point, not just because you're saying it or because I'm saying it,
right,
bias, but Frank was literally dusting out techniques that not only has he never dusted out, but makes sense that he would dust out stuff that he worked with Ricky as far as the takedowns and chains. Because as somebody who, you know, I remember, you know, scowling for all of Frank's, you know, I ended up picking Frank against Hunt. You know, I was obviously wrong on that fight, but I did pick Frank for that fight.
Wrong.
Yeah, no worries. I stand by it. I have no problem. I have, even after the fact. But the thing was, I remember my big key was, okay, if I see this path, but the key to that path is how he goes for takedowns. So, you know, my analytical mind, I go back, okay, well, now I'm going to go scout all relevant footage of Frank taking people down, how he does that, and compare and start doing my own math. And that was a fight, you know, against Arlovsky, where because there was just so much that Arlovsky wasn't doing, Frank was trying to compensate to do, as he should be doing.
Frank was making the fight.
Yes.
Arlovsky was not making the fight.
Yeah.
And then when you have a judge, when you had one crazy judge score all three rounds for Arlovsky, I'm like, which ones?
But why
did you want to score? I mean, like, you gave the third round where Frank knocked him down with a right hook, and then Frank threatened with a Kimura and threatened with a guillotine, or the second round where Frank took him down and then was trying to do the ground and pounds and was beating him in the stomach with elbows, and then Arlovsky basically held and stalled.
Yeah,
like,
that's his move. That's his move. He's in that forever. That's,
and he loves that stalling move.
I write it in my breakdowns all the time, is that in the clinch and on the ground, he stifles and he stalls. So bringing kind of full circle, even though you don't know Francis Ngannou as well as you know Frank Mir, obviously.
Right.
Based on what you know about Arlovsky from having to scout him for Frank, what do you see in this fight based on the little? Because we've all really seen little on Francis Ngannou. As great as he is, excited, and I'm excited, and we all should be excited for him. There's really not a lot of sample size to pull from.
No, there isn't. And earlier, before I was with you tonight, I was having dinner with our good friend Robin Black.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
I mean, you know, guys, you should vote for him for MMA Analyst of the Year. Because this man is the MMA Analyst of the Year.
He's got my
The
vote.
Genius that comes out of this guy's head is insane. We were talking about this fight. So he said the same thing like what you're saying, where there's not enough to know about Ngannou, and because it's heavyweights, it's hard to just say, oh, Ngannou's going to 100% win.
Right.
Because in the heavyweight division, you can't say anyone's going to 100% win.
Yeah.
One punch can actually change everything. 4 ounce gloves isn't like 10 ounce gloves, and anyone can hit anyone. And so, having said that, you know, I think Ngannou's got a good coach, but and he's in great shape.
Underrated coach.
Underrated coach.
A lot of people hate on the Paris thing and they immediately write it off.
No, I like his coach. I like Fight Factory Paris. I'm gonna butcher his name. I would just look at it.
Ferdinand or something like that.
Yes.
I don't know the other name, but that's the name I can pronounce.
So yeah, and he's the head coach at Fight Factory Paris, which I think is a Reebok affiliate over there. And also, they have two UFC other fighters. They have two other UFC fighters that he's coaching also.
Oh, yeah, the Lapolis brothers.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, he's coming out of a good coach.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I like the story of Ngannou. In terms of fighting skill, though, It's hard to say, right? It's just hard to say. He's bull strong. I mean, geez, you saw what he did with Anthony Hamilton, right? I mean, it wasn't like Anthony Hamilton was doing anything crazy wrong. But it's like, Ngannou's, I was telling Robin, I'm like, Ngannou's got like Shrek strength, you know? Like,
well, what's he what I was saying with that Shelton guy earlier when I was talking about athletic specimens, it almost skews the sample size further because with Ngannou, not only... was there questionable stuff that I saw when punches were getting thrown at him that I did not that I did not like?
Right.
The problem was, even if I wanted to be, you know, tinfoil hat and just go all in and sell out to that sample size, there's not enough sample size to sell out on because these athletic guys, not that Ngannou's a front runner, not that Shelton's a front runner, because neither of them has showed evidence to suggest that. But I use the word front runner because that's an associated thing that we can kind of grasp on for a measuring stick here. And with that aspect is when you have these athletic guys, even when they're not a front runner, they get treated like front runners because if you look at, you know, the reason why there's not much of a sample size of Ngannou getting punches thrown at him, because you see it all the time in the gym.
Yeah.
When there are guys that command that respect, whether it's in the gym matches for sparring or when they get into their amateur professional bouts, you'll see guys, you know, that term, oh, he was defeated before he got into the ring.
Right.
That's a dramatic way to put it, but really that happens probably more than we would think in the fact of guys will throw less, though. There's a lot of tells where guys, you don't have to, in other words, you don't have to be pointing to the ultra example of Mike Tyson to point to people getting defeated in the ring. There's plenty of tells where we've all seen and experienced ourselves of conceding things.
Right.
Whether it's in sparring, in practice room, or in the real show.
Right.
We see it. Toughest guys, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Those habits are habitual, right? They're very deeply embedded.
Yeah, and again, so with this one, I know you're picking Ngannou.
Yes,
I can understand why you're picking Ngannou. I mean, again, for everybody else, I'd be like, yeah, Ngannou would be the safe bet, and Ngannou by knockout would be the safe bet. Reason why I'm saying that isn't because I don't like Orlovsky, because
Orlovsky. Yeah, yeah.
It's because when you look at it, so Mir knocked him down, so that's a head concussion. And then Miocic knocked him out, so that's a head concussion.
He's been dropped in the last 5 fights.
Yeah, Overeem knocks him out, right? And then... But Barnett, submitted him.
He actually didn't get knocked down by Barnett, although he got kind of caught in space a lot.
Right.
He dropped Barnett. His chin held up, you know, more than Barnett for what it's worth. But then again, you know, Barnett's not known for his chin. Barnett's not known for his knockout power either. So I don't know how much you can put weight into that. But he actually didn't get, knocked down. But my stat is correct, though. He has been dropped or stopped in his last 5 fights.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a hard statistic to get around.
Since the Fedor fight, he's been getting hit a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so this is one of those fights now where, Orlovsky's not going to be able to run around the octagon on someone like Ngannou because Ngannou's in fantastic shape.
Right.
He switches right to left. His coach really hasn't, like, this guy's doing unders and level changes and then again he's even playing with his submissions right now. Like you saw what he did to Hamilton.
Playing with his stances. He's so young in his career and he's already going to southpaw like he's been doing it forever.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's funny because he would conduct everything off his left leg through jabs and shovel hooks off orthodox.
Right.
Now his last 2 fights he's going southpaw and conducting, and you know from working with Pacquiao and that scene of Wildcard, Pacquiao makes it look easy being a southpaw, you know, working things off lead crosses. It's not necessarily that easy to just double up like that, okay?
Right, right.
And obviously he's not, you know, doing the Pacquiao double ups or anything
But he just,
for a guy with no martial arts experience, just pick it up
he's athletic.
And say, you know what, I'm only a handful of fights in my professional career. I've never had any other combat experience. Let me just switch to southpaw and start leading with my left cross and be successful.
Right. I don't know if the reason why he's switching that way is maybe he saw the success Frank had in the third round with Orlovsky knocking him down with a right hook.
True.
Or, you know, so like I said, like Orlovsky's not going to be able to run away from Ngannou. So really, if I'm planning and I'm on Orlovsky's side, I would just tell him, I'd say, remember when you fought Travis Brown? And you remember when you just said, screw it, I'm going after this guy?
Yeah.
That's about the only chance Orlovsky really has. He's going to need to sit there and go, screw it, and let me go ahead and throw some strikes on this young lion. And let's see what happens. So
absolutely.
I'm hoping for the sake of fans that we see a fireworks fight.
Yeah,
And I hope that Orlovsky doesn't spend 15 minutes running. And if he does try to spend 15 minutes running, then I'm telling you, Ngannou will probably knock him out. So Ngannou will either knock him out in the third, or we're going to see a firefight. And if it's a firefight, I'll still say 50-50, just because I don't know where Ngannou is at when it comes into a firefight. So
I just hope that, last thing I'll say on this before we move on, I just hope that Ngannou shows, or Arlovsky shows up enough so that we learn something about Ngannou. You know what I'm saying? You know, at least throw some punches. I want to see how this guy reacts to somebody that knows how to throw some punches in space at him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We really haven't had that. He's faced guys who weren't the best strikers. All right. This is my dirty little secret. This is the main fight. This is the main event, obviously. But this was one of the main fights that I really wanted Angelo's opinion on. We got Cowboy Cerrone as the favorite against Jorge Masvidal, who I believe is coming at a +140 dog right now. This is a fight where I came in leaning the one way and ended up leaning the other. But to be honest, I really don't feel strong about either guy. So before I get into it, I want to hear your take on this one, Andrew.
So during the dinner with Robin, I was complimenting him on the awesome thing he just did on Masvidal, you know, kind of the
historical. I still have to watch it. I can't
wait. Oh, yeah, I haven't even seen that one yet. Oh, it's called. It's awesome. Wait, basically, he changed. Masvidal's nickname is The River now, you know. But nice. You have to watch the whole YouTube thing.
I hope it has to do with Texas Hold'em. Is that to do with Texas Hold'em? Or?
No. Okay. It actually has to do with Bruce Lee. So it's pretty cool. So I'm talking to Robin about it. I told him, I said, man, it's super entertaining. But him and I, it's kind of like you and me on our picks on this one. Me, I'm picking Cowboy Cerrone on it. All right. I love Masvidal. I like him a lot. At one point, him and I were even kind of playing with maybe possibly working together about a year ago. Masvidal's good, man. He is good. He is very good, and I'm glad this fight is happening. I think this is going to be your fight of the night. I just disagree that I know a lot of people think it'll go to distance. I think Cowboy is going to actually stop him. That's just... I was explaining to Robin how I saw the mathematics on it. And, you know, and again, I think it just comes down to... Brandon Gibson is one of the coaches that I really like, that's showing what he's doing based on the fighters he's working with.
Yeah.
You got to give credit where credit is due. And from Lando Venata to, you know, now, you know, you're seeing Cowboys kind of evolution even in the striking sense. And it's not exactly like Cowboys having these easy fights, you know. The Matt Brown fight wasn't an easy fight.
Yeah.
But he knocked him out.
No.
Rick Story going into it wasn't an easy fight, but he knocked him out. So I know Masvidal's calling for this fight. And it was like, Cowboy's not this and Cowboy's not that. And sometimes when fighters get like that, I feel like that the mistake might be, and I could be wrong. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong and Masvidal knocks him out.
Right.
And that would be great. You know, like I said, I love Masvidal. Looking at it, though, from my perspective as a coach, I think Masvidal's putting way too much of it in his head. And he's thinking about it way too much. And he's making it way too much about pride. Because this really just comes down to mathematics, man. It's like, this is the style you fight, Masvidal. And these are the tendencies you show. Well, this is the style Cowboy fights, and this is the tendencies he shows.
Yeah.
This is what Brandon Gibson's working on with him. So now, when I saw this matchup, and I understand why everybody's seeing it as 50-50, and I can understand, I just feel like Brandon Gibson's a better coach, man. I really do. I mean, we're talking if it turns into a striking match, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, if it ends up on the ground, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. If it ends up on the ground, we know that Cowboy's good on his jiu-jitsu. Yeah. We know that Masvidal's really good at scrambling. And, you know, so I'm talking, let's say this fight turns into a gunslinging fight.
Yeah.
And it turns into, let's go ahead and you kick me, I kick you. Yeah. You punch me, I punch you. Let's make it into a striking match.
Yeah.
Well, I just feel like Jorge drops his left hand way too much. Robin even pointed this out.
Yeah.
Right. Cowboys, both hands really, but he kind of does this thing with his left hand that I'm not that happy with, just because in this fight,
right hands over the top.
Yeah, well, and Cowboy does a really awesome job of. I mean, his switch kick is fast. It's fast, man, and Jorge is definitely not going to want to do too many slip duckings or going under, because he's going to run into a knee or a kick. I mean, and I'm telling you, Cowboy, he's playing with fire. Yeah, Cowboy kind of like makes you think he's not going to do that move, and then he pulls it off like in the third round. So if it like I can see the fight where it was kind of like the Matt Brown fight, where I can see where they're in a striking groove and the two of them are having fun with each other, and maybe like Cowboy wins the first, or Masvidal wins the first, Cowboy wins the second, and then they go into the third, and then they tap each other's hand, and then they're like, "Hey, bro, good fight," you know, right? And then that's when I think Cowboy could knock him out. Robin said the same thing to me. He was like, "Yeah, that's actually when Cowboy gets in a groove.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is when he feels like, oh, we're cool, buddy.
Yep.
All right, man, let's put on a fight together. Boom, knockout. Right?
And see, I guess that's my question on Masvidal here. What's the intention there? Like, I agree. When guys take this approach of calling someone out, it's either they see something and they're going to be 110% right, or they're going to be 110% wrong. It's never 70%. It's never 50%, right? They're either completely right and they're going to look good because they saw something, you know? Connor calling these people out, right? Connor does it the best. He knows what stylistic matchups are going to be good. He works the angle and he goes for it. Or some guys, it completely backfires. I remember Derek Lewis calling out Matt Mitrione, and I'm like, "Ooh, that's a bad matchup, man. That's a bad matchup. You're still raw." I love a big Derek Lewis fan, by the way, but I'm like, I'm a big fan of Mitrione's abilities are much better than what he might have performed with on Fight Night. One of those kind of dudes. So you always kind of respect that in your back pocket in case he can pull that out, and he did. And so you kind of always have to respect that. But so that's my thing and the thing is, with even though I'm not a big fan of that generally, I'm actually glad that Masvidal did that, because I feel Masvidal should be doing that more than anybody. Not because he's a badass and can back it up and he's a real fighter and no one's going to question him, but because he hasn't had the best matchups, he hasn't had the best decisions, he hasn't had the best promotional pushes.
Right.
So it almost makes sense. So I'm glad for him to do that. That being said, I'm glad and it makes sense and it's good for his career. But if it's just for your career, then that worries me, because there's no better truth teller than inside that cage, obviously.
Right.
You don't need me to tell you that.
Yes.
So, but if it's something that, you know, he says, and, you know, we've never seen Masvidal, he's not been one to bite his tongue, so it's not because he's afraid to bite his tongue.
And again, we're talking about a guy who was...
Maybe he sees something. But that's not why I picked him. The reason why I picked him, Angela, and there's not actually, like, a definitive reason, because it's hard for me to even argue with you, because you know what? That was my first instinct. Not that I just initially came with Cerrone, but I thought that Masvidal's dependency on trunk and head movement is going to cost someone who's just setting up head kicks and kind of sweeping and corralling that range, right? With lethal head kicks.
Right.
So I actually saw not just Cerrone winning, but getting a finish on Masvidal, who is very durable. People forget he's only been dropped twice in the UFC. A crazy spin kick from Khabibov, which was kind of random, and this overhand right that came out of nowhere from Darren Cruikshank, which was money, you know? And Masvidal no-sold it. He got dropped by these things and still got up and no-sold it and just started, you know, kept fighting. So, believe me, Cerrone should be the favorite. I would not be surprised, as not only did I see him winning, I saw him win like you did, Angelo, for the same exact reason. So, not crazy pick at all. It's just the more I looked at it, you call it bias, call it hunch, but I see this one going like a Nate Diaz and Donald Cerrone. The thing is, just like Shevchenko, we talk about Pena's thing, Shevchenko's thing is the same with Masvidal's activity, right? Activity's cost some decisions, lulls in activity, and Cerrone's only improved his volume. He's improved in the ranges now to implement that volume. He's not relying on kicking ranges. Now that he's working with Brandon Gibson, he can do it from boxing range. But the thing is, Masvidal, since he's gone up to welterweight, he's really turned it up. Now, he still lost these kind of close split decisions, but you can argue that he won that Benson Henderson fight. You can argue that he won that Lorenz Larkin fight, you know? It wasn't for his lack of trying, and I think he can abuse the center line. He's going to have some... It's one of those things where I'm not telling people to put their money on it or anything like that, because Masvidal will literally have to fight a perfect fight to win this. Because stylistically, more things are going in Cerrone's favor. I just think Masvidal is going to be able to light him up on the inside and enough for a stalemate, you know, from his front headlock to, I think he's actually a slightly better wrestler, that I think he's going to be able to edge these rounds. Masvidal's a guy that rises to the occasion. We saw it. He took a short notice 5-round fight against Benson Henderson. First main event, first 5-round fight, biggest name opponent, first former UFC champion, and I scored that fight for him. It wasn't a robbery at all. I wasn't upset when they called it for Benson, but I did score it for Masvidal. It was a close fight. And he rises to that occasion. This time he's got 3 rounds. If he can even put 3 of the rounds in that he put for 5 rounds against Benson, against Cowboy, then I think he can win. And I don't think Cowboy's a guy that performs well at home. I mean, speaking of Benson Henderson, that was the last time Cowboy fought at home, and it was a bad fight.
Okay.
You know, a guy who's very, and Cowboy is a guy who is mental, who's skillfully, he's in the top 10 in any division you put him in. But mentally, you know, what's his criticism, right?
Okay.
He's always lost the big fights. In other words, circumstances outside of the physical fight itself actually affect a guy like Cowboy as good as he is. And history has kind of pointed to that, you know? So I don't think this fight in the hometown necessarily does him favors. I think Jorge may even be able to get a decision, which is crazy if you consider that Masvidal, you know, the judges hate him. I just put a kind of a fun flyer, just a quarter unit, plus 241 Masvidal by decision. But again, Cerrone should be the justified favorite. He was my initial pick. Not crazy at all. I would not be surprised to see Masvidal get stopped.
Right. No, and yeah, I mean, every single point you just made, all correct. So like I said, I'm not like sitting there going,
right,
oh, Cowboy's every favorite. Yeah.
Yeah.
I even understand your whole point with the Benson Henderson thing, although I think at that time, you know,
yeah, when you look at the overall trend,
yeah. And again too, I mean, stylistically again, man.
That's stylistically two different styles.
Masvidal likes to square his hips a lot. Cowboy does pretty good against that style.
He's gonna feed him the leg.
If Masvidal was going more like southpaw, I could see maybe, you know, because Cowboy has some problems with the southpaw matchup, but
Masvidal doesn't do southpaw.
You know,
a lot.
Exactly.
He will, yeah. But not a lot.
And then I know, like, Masvidal's gonna try to, like, you know, try to use his boxing, but I mean, like, we talked about this before. Not all boxing is created equal. You know, and Cowboy's actually pretty good at neutralizing.
And as much as I love, I hate to use this term because, again, I'm sure you probably maybe hate it more for a different reason because it's such a general term, but slick boxing or slick boxers.
Right.
I like Masvidal because he's one of the few slick boxers in MMA, I dare say, whatever the F you want to say that means, just for face value. But that style is really bad against a Muay Thai style.
Right.
Like Cerrone. That style is really bad because that kind of a slick style, and it insinuates that someone, that means that the other person has to accept your terms before,
right,
for you to be effective.
Right.
For you to do that kind of pull and return and come on, let's play my game.
Right.
I'm going to pull,
right,
again, and I'm going,
right,
to, we're going to pull in mid-range. If the guy doesn't want to play that game, you're in big fucking trouble.
Right, right,
you
right,
so,
right.
So yeah. Cerrone could definitely tax him if he's defended on the wrong game.
Yeah, and again, we can go back and forth on this thing, but yeah, that's why I'm picking Cerrone. I feel like this will turn into an emotional match, and Cerrone is good at it. So,
absolutely.
So I know you're picking Masvidal. I'm going Cerrone knockout.
All right, cool.
Let's see what happens.
Let's get to this last match here. Shevchenko versus Pena. I don't even know who you pick on this one, Angelo. So why don't you lead off again, my man? Who do you got on this one?
So for me, I am picking, and again, let me just say I like both ladies, but I'm picking Shevchenko, picking her by knockout with knees in the third round. Now, my man, Robin Black, who I talked to about this.
Yeah, what did Robin say? I didn't know what
he's saying. Picking Shevchenko, first round stoppage.
That's right. That's bold that he said the first round. Now, I am going, you asked me why I said inside the distance on my pick Shevchenko.
Yes.
The decision. This is actually a pick. I actually initially came in picking Pena because, you know, she could very well still, obviously, get on top. And if Shevchenko did not address her techniques or urgency that plagued her on the bottom, then as tough as she is, she could get stopped by a submission or cuts because she's so tough and durable. I don't see her getting knocked out, and she's so physically and mentally durable. But I like that you said knees, Angelo, because first of all, not hating, because people like yourself that I respect calling Holly Holm was the justified favorite against Shevchenko. So in no way is my playful.
Yeah, you had that one on the button when you did that breakdown with the Omen Shevchenko. You had that one you had it exactly.
But it's great though, because now I'm seeing like pundits, people I respect, analysts, odds makers. Now they're giving Shevchenko respect, and I'm not calling people out when I say that, like, oh, so you know, I told you. No. I'm glad people are, because clearly, you know, they're seeing things. So where now I'm not feeling so crazy, because I think I picked Shevchenko for every fight, including Nunes, which I still stand behind.
Okay.
Because I have long considered her a dark horse, and now I feel like, just like Robert Whittaker, I can't call these people my dark horses anymore because they're doing so damn well. They're title
they're
contenders
no longer
now.
Dark horses.
Yeah, they're title contenders now, and that is Shevchenko. Even if she goes and loses this fight, she's still in the conversation, right? But I like that you said niece of the body, because as much as, you know, I didn't just call, you know, we all can call fights. I don't get proud of that. I'm proud of my Shevchenko versus Holm fight, because that's one of the few ones where people tell me, like, oh, I read that breakdown, and it sounded like you wrote it after the fight. That's the biggest fucking compliment I can ever get, by the way. I don't care if I got it right that someone's going to win, or even if I said triangle stroke and they said triangle choke. But when I say that, oh, her check right hook is going to be the strike to look out for, and that becomes a strike to look out for, you know, that made me proud. And although the check right hook, the reason why I brought that up is because, yes, it will be something to look out for. Check hooks are, you know, arguably, I will say, on paper, the best weapon against an aggressive oncomer, especially an aggressive oncomer who kind of ignores fundamentals defensively.
Right.
Check anything is going to be real nice for you, right? Check jab, check knee.
Right.
You know, we talked about Cerrone, that check knee. You know, so these are really good things. It'll definitely play a factor, but I'm with you, Angelo.
Okay.
It's going to be the knees. It's going to be the knees or the liver kick. But let me tell you why, because even though Pena is good at taking girls down, she only does it from the clinch. She doesn't shoot, and she hasn't even... Not successful. She hasn't even attempted a catch kick takedown where you catch someone's kick and counter. Even though Shevchenko, it's hard to catch her kicks because she's really good at throwing them and she's really good at timing them. But it's not like, you know, if she lets Shevchenko set up her kick, she's going to be in real trouble, first of all, okay? But if she goes and engages the clinch, she's going to run into problems, because Pena got all her takedowns from outside trips. Or inside trips. That's where Shevchenko makes her money, except Shevchenko's much more technical, she's much more base, she has much more balance, and I think she's going to eat her up in this space. More importantly, when Pena abandoned her offensive objectives inside of the clinch, she did it to pull guard, which is bad, no matter who you are, okay? Even if you're really good at from your guard, it's not recommended in MMA. Pena does not have a guard where she can justify that.
Mm-hmm.
So when looking closer, she ate body shots every time she dropped guard.
She does not like the body shots.
And there's something weird, which I want you to touch on this after I get this at this point, because I really want to hear what you have to say. You know, when you that term soft to the body, you hear it more in boxing, more in your world, the striking world, right? Now, I really want to hear what you have to say on that, but I think Pena shows those stereotypes, because anytime she got touched to the body by girls who were not the best strikers, who were not in the best scenarios, two striker to the body, still garnered that reaction.
Right.
And from my experience, and we're going to go to yours here in a second, when you get that reaction, it usually says something. That's usually a switch that's on or off for a lot of people that I find. And I feel that if Shevchenko lends her liver or body kick, that's where the momentum's going to sway. It may not finish her, but it will lead to a finish.
A lot of this is... So, I mean, even Robin said this about Pena. Pena's chaotic. There's not really even a... Like, her style is... If you're going to give Pena a style, what's her style? It's confidence.
Nah.
She's so confident. She believes that she's going to be undefeated. She believes that she's going to grab you. She believes she's going to take you down. She believes that she's the number one.
Yeah.
And she's going to beat you up. So what happens when you finally cannot bully someone who's actually better than you technically?
Yeah.
Right now,
yeah, absolutely.
Again, having said that, what did Pena do for this camp? Or what I've heard she's done over the last, I think, two maybe. She's been going to Chicago. She's been learning from Yair's coach. I don't know if that'll help her or hurt her, because really, you're gonna try to learn striking again. I mean,
you don't know a lot about Valley, by the way.
I don't know a lot, that's why I'm asking. I was just thinking more like it could have been anybody. Could have been any striking coach, but. You're going against arguably the best striker, pure striker, at 35.
Oh, not just at 35. How about at any female division in the UFC? Or wait, how about any female division in the world? Because she beat Yoni and Jacek three times in IMF,
right.
FA.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. So now you got Pena. Let's say Pena goes with, she's with Valley.
Yes.
But she went with whoever the striking coach is. Doesn't matter who it is. And then she gets her striking to be going from a 50 to an 80. Robin was making this point. She's like, let's say, she goes from 50% to 80% as a striker. Savchenko's still at 99. So really, you're going to go against that? That's your plan? Your plan is I'm going to go ahead and try to strike with this person? So this is where the mistake, where when we're looking at like a Ronda against a Nunes or a or you've even seen some of the stuff I'm doing with Jessica Andrade, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So when you have somebody who is good at whatever it is that they're great at, clearly with Pena, it's if I get you down and I get on top of you, man, I'm a bully and you're not going to get out of it. I mean, she kind of did that in UFC 200 also. You know, she's got that type of strong mentality. If I get on top, I'm going to beat you up. So what kind of striking could she have done to have helped her get to that point? So I don't know. I mean, Yair's style of striking, are we going to see Pena move like Yair now? Like I said, if that was just one of those things where you're building the girl's confidence, hey man, by striking with us, you're going to become more confident. All right, well, I really hope that you realize that you're going in there with one of the best strikers in the world, period.
Yeah, literally.
So if you try to strike with this striker, you're going to lose. So your best chances are to be chaotic, go crazy, jump at her, and maybe Shevchenko will fall down, and then you'll end up on top.
And maybe that's why Robin's first round prediction doesn't sound so crazy, because that's going to be her best opportunity. But that also kind of forces the do or die aspect. And you brought up the Rousey versus Nunes, which a lot of people I've said about Pena for a minute, but I think more people are seeing that now because Nunes reminded of us. It's recently in our lexicon, but we've seen Pena get caught in space with strikes in similar fashion. She's been able to push through thus far. But so was Rousey, right? So was Rousey. I mean, no one was questioning Rousey until she got knocked out. Everyone was like, oh, it's fine. And I remember doing a study because there was so little sample size. And I was like, this probably doesn't mean anything because I was on the Rousey train too. I picked Rousey over Holm, I'll admit it. But what I did do was I looked through with a fine-tooth comb and the little sample size there was. But I went through a fine-tooth freaking comb and I'm like, she's consistently taking 5 to 6 strikes every 20 to 30 seconds of every fight dating back to everything that's on record.
Right.
It was there. I knew it was that. Of course, it didn't sway me from my pick, but I mean, this stuff's there if you know what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
We don't always recognize it, even those of us who should know better.
Right.
It's no, it's no pride, no ego. I'm not hating. I'm no better. Believe me.
Right.
Believe me.
Right.
I'm just saying that, but it proves the point that the sky is blue, and if you fail to recognize the sky is blue, it doesn't matter if a rainy day or the weather's going to be different on fight day. You still need to recognize the sky is blue.
Right.
If that makes sense.
That totally makes sense. And again, so let's play this out. All right. So Pena, let's say, even wins.
Yeah. No,
Pena
she
wins by, let's say, decision, right? Which
sure.
She tends to do. Yeah. She wins by decision.
Okay.
Right?
Following you.
So what? She's going to fight Amanda Nunes? Dude, Amanda Nunes hits so hard. Are you kidding me?
That's an interesting matchup because it's just like they're like very similar prototypes of one another, But
Nunes
it's a weird
is,
match.
I think Nunes
match.
Has gotten better.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
I mean, I think Nunes is getting better and better, so...
She's much more technical.
Yeah, so...
Much more technical, for sure.
So, this is one of those where... If Savchenko loses, I think she'll be okay.
Yeah.
Pena's confidence right now is on the whole fact that she hasn't lost.
Yeah.
So, I think if she loses, it actually breaks her.
She can take a bad, like, Rousey. Yeah, I recently watched an interview with her, and it was like a pre-fight and a fight she ended up winning. or I think she actually just won, so even more reason to be relieved and, like, not have a worry. There was, like, a weight on her, like, the fight was about to happen, and she was worried she was going to lose the fight. Now, this is, like, someone who you said, you could see her unshakable confidence. I don't know, you know, you don't even know she realizes she's going to lose. She believes in herself so much.
Right.
But there isn't, as you know, because you work with the toughest people in the world, you see behind that curtain, you know that the toughest people, there's a balance there. Sometimes that balance for the toughest part of them is the softest part.
Right.
Some of the softest people you see in the world, too. And I don't mean that as a discredit. This is being honest. This is human characteristics. And yeah, I saw that side of her in this interview, and it's crazy to say that because I think you're right. I think the loss hurts her more.
Yeah, and again, we don't know what's going to happen. Yes. Anything can happen in any given fight, but she loses by knockout, needed a body, let's say, or the way Robin's saying it.
First round.
Loses, first round, gets knocked out. What's it do to her? What happens to the Venezuelan vixen who's the best in the world, that's talking a lot of crap, that's saying this and saying that and saying this, saying that? I mean, again, like a lot, so much of the eggs are on the confidence basket.
Yeah.
That I really, you know, I almost feel like Vixen is like Ngannou. I don't really know what I'm going to get yet.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't know. She hasn't shown awesome boxing.
Healthy skepticism.
Yeah, it's like she hasn't shown amazing kickboxing. She hasn't shown awesome, outstanding jiu-jitsu, like on a technical sense. So she's wild, man. She's wild, and she keeps winning off of wildness. So are we going to see controlled skill,
right,
precision, samurai type striking from Shevchenko, or is wildness going to win again?
Right.
And then we're going to go ahead and see what happens. But for me, again, I picked Shevchenko. I know you picked Shevchenko. Yeah. Robin's picking Shevchenko. So, you know, if she proves this wrong, I'll be like, awesome. She proved this wrong.
I'm glad, again, a mutual friend of ours and former guest in the TechUnec podcast, Robin Black. It's cool that you just came back from dinner because we're actually getting his picks on here too. So you listeners, you guys are getting bonus. You're not just getting Angela Reyes' picks. You're getting Robin Black's picks, okay? Like the private dinner conversation picks here. Angela Reyes is sharing with you on the TechUnec podcast. But all right, so we have Robin's picks, your picks, and my picks all chalked up here. This is fun. We all got to get together and raise some havoc. All right, so we both are on Shevchenko, and that is actually the last prop, Angela. I have Shevchenko inside the distance. You can get at a +303, which is ironic because she's training at the 303 Training Center.
Oh, cool. Camp. Okay.
But yeah, so I got one unit on that. I think she's going to get it done. I'll admit, you know, there's bias. She's one of the styles that I'm very biased to, you know, coming from, you know, kind of the Taekwondo base, Southpaw. You know, there's a lot of things, I mean, before I did this analyst work, I'd be studying these fighters for different reasons, just for my game, you know, to add to my game. I would look at what are the best Southpaw fighters in the realms, what are they doing? Now, what can I take from that, you know?
Right.
So it's really cool to be able to study these fighters from this angle now. But man, Angelo, all right, it's late, we went way long. Thank you for doing this, man. I'm going to get you out of here because it's late for both of us. But, dude, I really appreciate it. We didn't get much for submissions and transitions, so we're going to skip that segment. But before we get out of here, Angelo, do you want to tell the audience where they can find you, what you got going on, anything we can expect?
Yeah,
I know there's a lot of things you can't tell us.
Yeah, no,
because
no,
you have your hands in a lot of things over here. Right. But anything you can tell us.
Yeah, no, I you know, just for anyone who wants to follow me, I'm at Reyes Striking, I think, on Twitter. And I'm at Reyes Boxing on Instagram. You guys can find me on Facebook, you know, the Cage Sider Show, that's the one we do here local for ESPN Las Vegas, so you guys could maybe subscribe to that on iTunes, the Cage Siders, and then Alessandro Ricci's fighting February 19th.
Yes, Felder. Great matchup.
That's one I'm waiting for your breakdown on.
Oh, I'm excited for that matchup.
So that'll be fun. Paul Felder versus Alessandro Ricci. Fun project. And then Jessica Andrade is fighting Angela Hill. So she's somebody that I just recently kind of teamed up with her head coach, Gillard Pirana. So looking forward to seeing how well she does there in Houston. with the little bit that me and Robert kind of covered with her.
Speaking of Dark Horses, oh man, we can't go. We can't even call her Dark Horse anymore either.
She's another one.
She graduated already, man. Yeah, she was fun. She was fun, but now she's not going to be such a secret, especially working with you. So I'm excited.
With Andrade, I don't call her a dark horse. I actually think she's going to be the champ.
Me too.
As soon as they make the match, whenever that is, I believe she'll beat Joanna and be the champ. So
that's awesome. Well, we'll get you on here. Maybe get with Ricci or some other people. There's definitely a lot of fighters I want to pick your brain. And Angela, you only work with the best because you're not like these revolving doors or anything like that. I'm not hating. I don't mean that in a negative to anybody. But you really are kind of doing what finally I think the MMA world is catching up on now. We're specializing, cutting the fat, going to the people who know nonsense, who know what they're talking about. And you're one of the people doing that and helping a lot of fighters with all your experiences, man. Not just in boxing. People associate with boxing, but you know, there's so much before and after in your long career that. So I'm excited to see that, man. Thank you for coming on the Protect Your Neck podcast. It was a kind of late impromptu show. We had my dog molesting you. We had drinks. You just came from Robin Black, having lunch and getting predictions from him. So this was fun, man. Thank you for stopping by.
Thank you, guys. Hope you enjoyed it.
Definitely, man. I know a lot of people were wanting your opinion, so I hope. I did enough as a medium man for you listeners and got Angelo to get some opinions on these fights here. So good luck on those, and big shouts to y'all for listening, and those of you who have been subscribing, sending the nice comments, supporting the show. It really, really means a lot. Look out for my stuff to come out on Flow Combat. Typo free from here on out, I promise. it was just that little dumb pick, I know, but I really appreciate y'all interacting with me, even giving me crap. Go ahead, please. It's really, really, really fun. Reach out, ask questions, comments, all that stuff, man. @TheMMAnalyst, follow the podcast @ThePYM Podcast. We'll be back next week for a recap, actually, UFC Denver, and then we'll be previewing the Houston show that Angelo just mentioned. But until next time, and until that time, I should say, protect your neck.